What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Cheeky Midweeky, where we are making strength and conditioning not boring anymore. Today's episode, I am joined by Brendan Smith from Wired to Move, and we talk about the nervous system and how important it is on all systems of your body. We also talk about fascia and how misconceptualized it is by plenty of coaches. In this episode, like I said, we're really going to dive on the nervous system, talk a lot about Signal 6, Square 1. I've had Sean Sherman on the show before, so if you're a nerd on the nervous system, this episode is going to be for you. Before we dive into it, here's my ask. Please hit that subscribe button as it helps our show grow. It doesn't cost you anything. It also does not cost you to rate and review the show. If you do that, it will help us. Take a screenshot of your rating and review, email it to us at service@strengthcoachnetwork.com, and we have a free gift to you for doing so. Here at Strength Coach Network, we pride ourselves on giving you the best quality information from strength and conditioning coaches and practitioners that still work with or have worked with athletes. This is not theory. We are always about giving you practical information that you can apply day one, the minute you're done listening to this. And you can check us out for a $1 trial in the link down below. Click that link and find out more about us. Vacations are meant for you to be outside doing things that you love and reconnecting with your family and your friends and recharging your battery. It is not meant for you to travel and listen to some coach talk in a conference hall and eat some food that you know really isn't the best thing that you want to be eating. Take back your vacations and do so with a Strength Coach Network annual membership. When you purchase an annual membership, you're going to get access to our course, Performance Coaching 101. In the subsequent years, it'll renew and you'll get access to 102 and 103. Each year, you're going to get access to 2 NSCA CEUs and 10 CSCCA CEUs. These CEUs will allow you to be able to learn from the comfort of your office. You'll be able to earn CEUs on your time rather than having to travel. Take back your vacations and be able to do this with a Strength Coach Network annual membership. Click the link down below for more information.
The multiple time zone change on things.
Nah, that sounds perfect, yeah.
This is better now?
Yeah.
Awesome. Brendan, thanks for coming on the show, man. And why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself for everybody so that way they know who you are, but we've been talking off air for a while.
Yeah, no worries, man. Thank you for having me. My name's Brendan. I live in Australia. I work on people's nervous systems to try and help them improve their pain, performance, and recover from concussions and all sorts of things like that. So I started out about, 7 years now in a traditional sense, you know, manual therapy, fascial release, all that kind of work. And then it was through my own adversity and injuries that forced me to look down other rabbit holes and ways of working and helping people to help myself first, and discovered the power of tapping into the nervous system, and then found Sean Sherman from Square One System, and then that just, yeah, completely changed things for me. So yeah, learn a lot. The learning never ends, but it's been a great journey so far.
Now, I want to double-click on the nervous system stuff because I feel like it just gets so misunderstood, and I think strength coaches get scared of it because we can't see it. We can see bones. We can see muscles. We're going to dive into the fascia stuff later, but we can see fascia, and that's a different conversation that we'll have. But the nervous system, talk about it in a way that doesn't scare strength coaches so they can understand how to train it, use it, whatever the proper word is, to help their athletes.
Yeah. I mean, everyone talks about the nervous system, but I don't think we understand that it is like the CEO of our movement. Our bones, joints, ligaments, tendons, muscles, everything like that are the worker bees of what the nervous system is demanding is the way I picture it. And when the nervous system doesn't trust what we're trying to get it to do, it's going to reduce movement or range of motion. It's going to increase tension in a muscle or maybe its tone or pain level. And until we show it a sign of safety that it can go into at that particular position safely again, it's going to block that access. So we need to get the nervous system on board with what we're trying to do first, and then it makes strength coaches or performance coaches or people trying to solve injuries and things like that much easier.
Now, when you talked about the nervous system, let's talk fight, flight, freeze, because I don't think people talk as much about the freeze.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the freeze eye picture, like, you know, there's fight or flight running from a lion, but when it's freeze, it's all of a sudden where it's like, okay, I'm absolutely stuck in this position and I cannot move. So it could be completely blocking access to a movement altogether. It could be when under stressful situations, we completely shut down and immobilize. We don't know how to respond. We can't run. We all flee. We just sort of freeze in the moment. And this can play out in many different ways. Yeah, it's another really powerful thing to look out for, and knowing how to help someone start to shift that in the right direction.
The thing that I wrote down there was about, you know, how do we put safety in the system? Let's start there before we go into the other question I have. So what are some of the best techniques that you have that coaches can practically use to put safety into the system so athletes can access those ranges of motion?
I mean, that's why I do use Square One system a lot. So we can interview the nervous system and ask it whether it likes a position or not. Or is there a potential primitive reflex that's active that is blocking that movement being accessed? So people who struggle to dorsiflex their foot, maybe they're trying to squat, they're struggling to dorsiflex their foot. Sometimes that can be a primitive reflex at the bottom of the foot. And every time there's a sensation change at the bottom of the foot, it will force the foot to go into plantar flexion constant. One of them is called the Babinski reflex, and it will actively get the foot when it's stimulated and put it in plantar flexion. So you're trying to ask someone to go into dorsiflexion, and if this reflex is present, it's going to inhibit or reduce their capacity to be able to do that well. So testing primitive reflexes. I use Square One system a lot to interview the nervous system and ask it, do you like this position? If not, where do you want information from? Is it your vestibular system, your visual system, or your proprioceptive system?
Now, anybody, they've now heard that two times. Signal the Square One, but there's also the Signal 6. Sean has been on the show before, so anybody that's listening and is curious, you can click the link down below to get the episode that I did with Sean. I want to say 2 years ago, could have been 3 years ago, because I started using it at Towson after I was introduced to it. I'm Signal 6 certified, technically, which means I completed the course. Never dove into the Square One. My understanding is Signal 6 is your shotgun. Square One is your sniper approach to help individual people. So we've piqued everybody's curiosity, but what is this Square One? What is all of these things? How are you, you know, interviewing the nervous system, as you've said before, so people can kind of learn about it and help their athletes out?
Yeah, so Sean Sherman, yeah, he did create Square One. What we're doing is we're using muscle testing, or we refer to it as neuro response testing, because you can never say you're isolating a particular muscle when you're testing it. Yeah. But what we can say is when we perform a stimulus on the body, and we then ask the body a question by using a neuro-response muscle test, does it respond in a positive way, or does it tell us no response, which is then giving us the insight the body didn't like that input? And then if it doesn't like the input, where can we give it a safety signal from in terms of three systems that control our posture? Our vision, because that's how we see the world. Our vestibular system, because that's how we move through space without losing balance. Or our proprioceptive system, knowing where our body is in space and can it safely access or perceive to access these positions safely. So we can use one of those three systems to give it a safety input and restore what it's perceiving as unsafer of a threat. So it could be a lunge, it could be dorsiflexion of the ankle, it could be a squat, it could be any movement.
Now, you know, with it, like, let's talk a little high level on the Signal 6 stuff for me, because, you know, I remember doing complete abduction, like chest up here, the adduction, knees together, the bridges, knees wide, knees together, turn the toes, windshield wiper them.
Yeah.
That stuff versus RPR, be activated, and Douglas Heel's been on the show before, and everybody, if you want that episode, click it down below. I'm saying this because it's all worked for me, and it is like, it just is something where it's like, my goodness, I feel like I can move better. I'm not really in pain. Like, and I love how Douglas, it would be like, yeah, like, I don't know exactly what happened, but we're happy that you're feeling better, right? Like, is that why maybe coaches get frustrated? Because that is the answer, quote unquote, unfortunately, but that is the reality of the situation.
As in, they don't know why it works.
Team Builder has been my trusted source for online software programs for my athletes since 2019. Since then, they've continued to grow. They have this new practice integration where practice planning can integrate with the sport coach. You have your sports science, your AMS, the questionnaires. They've continued to evolve and keep giving you the things that you need. It has made my life easier as a strength coach. I want the same for you. You do not need to keep printing on lift cards. Please, printing on lift cards in Excel, you don't need to do that. If you need help being able to purchase it, they have a pre-written grant on their website. They're also part owners in the Plyomat with Coach Rich Burnett. So if you need to get a good device that can accurately and validly and quickly get your jump height and ground contact time, so now you can get RSI, Plyomat's a great choice. We utilize that at Goldfinch. Check Team Builder. Check them out in the link down below. Please stop printing on lift cards. It's going to make your life easier. It's going to make your athlete's life easier. It's easier to program on the back end. Check out Team Builder in the link down below.
Yeah, like the exact, like, oh, I can't tell you, you know, exactly, like, hey, I did, you know, with the Signal 6 or the set, like, you added some safety to the system. Now your body can move. Like, we can't precisely be like, oh, hey, when you broke your bone, you can see that, hey, now it's healed. And it was with time and nutrients, like, now your bones are healed. But when you can see and feel that instant change with the nervous system, I think that's the thing that just kind of weirds people out.
Yeah. And I think when you dive in and do the original square one, or now level two of square one, where we're actually asking the body, where are you missing information from? Where do you want this missing piece of your movement puzzle cleared up? Is it from your thoracic spine? Is it from right knee flexion when your right foot hits the ground? So we can make it as specific as we like, but Signal 6 is one of those great things that you don't have to run square ones specifically to get great results. But if you want to solve more complex tasks for once you've started working with an athlete, after a little while, it needs to become more specific, because once you've made the nervous system more robust, it's going to be harder to break it down. So that's the whole idea, is we want to draw out the most amount of compensation layers in your nervous system and get it to perceive more safety. And the more layers we can peel through that, the more resilient we're making. But we can be as detailed as you want it to be, really. But in terms of Signal 6, it's not giving you a great deal of information. It's giving you a broad overview and making some assumptions, but it still works. But the Square One system itself can actually give you a lot of great detailed information. To give you an example to that, I had a guy come and see me with knee pain, and all of his compensation layers were coming back to his right wrist, not liking radial deviation. And I'm like, have you ever injured this wrist before? And his mind was just blown. He goes, 6 months ago, I had to keep my wrist in a brace and I could not access this position. And then all of a sudden, after a number of layers peeling through that, I kept coming back to this wrist, all of a sudden, his knee pain went up. So we can make it really detailed by asking the body and not making assumptions. You know, in my world, when I was trained, it was, oh, you know, your lower back's sore. It must be your hip flexors are working too much, or your hamstrings or glutes aren't firing enough. But that's a really small lens and a lot of assumptions to be made to go about solving someone's issues that way, where when we can ask their body, where does it want information from, it takes a lot of guesswork out for us and leaving it up to their neurology to give it the information.
So within square one, are you then going through asking the body questions, doing the things, and then performing squats? Because that's what I remember. It was like, hey, you know, perform some bodyweight squats, go through these movements, perform some bodyweight squats, see how you feel different. And like you said, with the layers, you do it a couple times, and like, my goodness, like even just talking about it with you right now, I'm like, I want to stop talking. I want to go do it and just access, yeah, you know, knees out, feeling good when squatting.
Yeah. I suppose the beauty is there is no one-size-fits-all approach with it. So we've got chiropractors who can run it through their background of knowledge. We've got physiotherapists, we've got strength coaches, we've got manual therapists. You can come into this with whatever background you've got, and whatever input you're putting on the system. Is it you're going to massage your muscles? Is it are you a coach and you want someone to squat? Then we need to ask their body, hey, are you happy with this input or are you not? So that's where it's a really flexible framework like that, but it's a matter of however you want to do it. I work differently to how Sean uses it to how some of the other Square One guys use it. So for me, I could stimulate a primitive reflex to see if it's active or not. And then if it is active, where does the body want more information from to restore that and integrate that reflex, which could be driving a large compensation pattern for their whole body.
Now, is that where you're starting to use, like, the neuro balls? And again, forgive me for my ignorance on this. Like, I'm trying to learn just as much as everybody else on the podcast. Yeah. Like, this is the best part about me getting to host this show is I get to learn live. Right? Like, everybody else, this comes out later. But is it the neuro balls? Is it the walking on the rocks? Is it the rock mats? Like, not just walking on regular rocks, people do, or the ground. Like, what is it? How are the ways to do it?
Are you meaning about the reflexing?
Yeah, like stimulating those primitive reflexes, and then like, how do you learn all those reflexes? And like, because again, that's got to be just insane.
Yeah, I mean, I've gone pretty deep down the neuro rabbit hole, and I mean, there's like 28 primitive reflexes, so there's so many of them. But in terms of, let's say that one on the bottom of the foot, the Babinski reflex, you could easily research this, but you're dragging your thumb or a pen or something from their heel bone on the lateral part of their foot and then across to the big metatarsal and flicking across, and you'll see their foot reflexively jump or move. If you're seeing that, it's highly likely their reflex is active. But then we can also use Square One to interview the nervous system and confirm what we already think we've found.
Now, I've heard somebody say something even as a child, if like you walked too soon and you weren't on your hands and crawling as long, or if you didn't get tickled enough, you know, that because you're still ticklish on the bottom of your feet and your hands, like that could show some delay in the nervous system. Is there validity to any of that, or is that just hogwash that I've heard?
No, it seems to be in terms of a lot of the research done on retained primitive reflexes. So a lot of these primitive reflexes should be they should integrate after the first 2 years of life. If they're not integrated or they've come back on, a big reason they come back on is head injuries or going under for surgery and stuff like that. But no, there's a lot of validity and a lot of research behind these primitive reflexes and what causes them to potentially not integrate from the start. So skipping crawling is a good one. That means someone doesn't have great left and right brain coordination, and you would see these people, if they marched on the spot, their left arm and their left knee would swing forward at the same time instead of the opposite hand and the opposite knee.
Hawken Dynamics is my preferred choice for force plates and for handheld dynamometers. Made in the USA up in Maine, I have been using them since 2020 when I was at Towson University. Still use them at Goldfinch today, and I brought the plates to the high school that I've trained at. We will use the plates and transport them when we train athletes at the many different high schools that we currently work at. As I said, they are a handheld dynamometer as well with the true strength. You can assess athlete internal, external rotation, hip, AB, adduction, calf strength, hip, whatever you want to assess, you can do with the true strength. It also has the ability to pair with the difference striking machine. So now you can see single strike, multiple strike. Check out Hawken Dynamics down in the link down below.
So that's going to create compensation patterns, and also it's going to affect how their abdominals fire when they move, create muscle imbalances, a wider range of issues that can drive.
You were talking about research. What are some of the research that people can be looking up? We'll link it down below for anybody. That way they can do some deep dives on this stuff themselves.
There's been years and years of research on primitive reflexes and how that creates, like, whether it's autism, muscular dysfunction, how well someone activates their posterior chain when they're trying to perform athletic movements. There's so much. You've just literally got to go into, you know, any of the good medical journals and Google anything to do with primitive reflexes. And there's a great Dr. Sally Goodart. she's done some amazing research on primary reflexes. Sally Goodar. Forgive me on how to spell it. It's G-O-O-D-A-R-D, I believe. And there's Dr. Shickley as well. He's a French doctor. He's done incredible work with primitive reflexes as well.
How does this stuff tie into the concussion stuff too? Because I feel like that's something that, again, will scare coaches because a chiropractor friend of mine was doing a lot of like neuro watch, neuro grow, and understanding how some of maybe the baseline, like, oh, stay out. Like there's not the, they're ignoring the brain and its role in a concussion and the symptoms and input, and then how that, you know, a concussion can then increase the likelihood of a lower body injury. How can we tie all of this in and still like not do things wrong, do things right by the athlete, but be on the cutting edge of research? Like it just seems like such a razor thin line, but that's what we're trying to do as strength coaches, is walk that fine line and do things great.
Yeah. So, I mean, we still need all these specialist inputs doing complete medical assessments, knowing whether someone's safe or not to be able to return to the field and things like that. But in terms of what we can deem minor head injuries or even any sort of concussion, even a whiplash injury, there's some research now showing that primitive reflexes will reemerge, and I see this constantly, that anyone who's suffered a whiplash, any sort of head injury, undergone a surgery, these primitive reflexes will reemerge. And then, as you said, their likelihood of like doing an ACL is like something like 70% more likely after a head injury. In terms of the long-term effects, I don't touch on that. That's up to neurologists and people much smarter than me to take over and look after. But there's plenty we can do in the short term to resolve a lot of these immediate effects and symptoms that people suffer with straight after the concussion. So we can look at how well the lymphatic system is moving, because inflammation's going up in the body to try and help the brain recover. We can look at how they're breathing. We can see what primitive reflexes have come back on. But we can also assess and test for previous impact points. So in our skin, we have what's called nociceptors. So we've all burnt our finger on a hot stove at some point. The job of these skin receptors is to look out for danger. Something sharp, something bites us, something burns us, or let's say we get hit and we fracture our arm. Our brain, through our spinal cord, picks up on all these different stimuluses and will perceive certain ones ongoing as a threat. But through using things like square one system, we can interview the nervous system, find out which stimulus it's still perceiving as a threat. And then once we reduce and downregulate the response the nervous system is having, stuff gets a whole lot better real quick.
Really that quick?
It blows my mind. Honestly, my brothers here in Australia are rugby league players, and I've worked on many other concussion clients since. But as soon as there's some telltale signs you see after a head injury, they lose the ability to converge their eyes or track visual targets. Or if you test their peripheral vision, all of a sudden it becomes much narrower after a head injury. These primitive reflexes emerge. And in one session, I can have 80% of that resolved. Just through getting the brain and the nervous system one more organized, integrated, and not perceiving as much threat in what it's trying to do. Because you think the after a concussion, the most sensory information we receive is through our head. We smell through our head, we taste, we chew, we swallow through our head. So as soon as there's been a danger and impact here, the brain is going to be on high alert with danger.
Yeah, we hear through our head.
We eat, swallow, chew, smell. Yeah, we obviously hear as well.
Golly, yeah.
Yeah. So we really need to start taking notice of these impact points and starting to unpack these more to really do a nice, thorough job to help these guys feel better in the short term.
You touched on the visual system, vestibular system. Like, we've had Jeff Moyer talk about that And if you're a member of Strength Coach Network, go inside and watch his webinar on performance vision. Or if you have fundamentals too, make sure you watch that module on, you know, seeing to perform better. How important is the vestibular system within the nervous system world? Is that not something that you do as about you talked about it, so I'd like to, you know, go down that hole.
I mean, it's an option as a way to treat someone. I use it more of as a test. So I'll test, say, use a computer step test and see if they bias a rotation or walking forwards or walking backwards when they're marching on the spot with their eyes closed where they don't know where they are. I'll use it as a bit of a baseline assessment, and I'll use it and test things along the way. And I can challenge their vestibular system, but knowing that our eyes and vestibular system are deeply connected, I more focus on the eyes and then watch these effects change the vestibular output that they see. So if someone's balance is off, I'm going to look for head injuries, but then I'm going to look at what their visual system's doing. And if we can resolve what's going on with the visual system, all of a sudden we see the output and the control of the vestibular system change.
What I wrote down as you were talking there is proprioceptors, because I feel like that kind of can get, you know, proprioceptors, mechanoreceptors in the body and within your reflexes. That can get undertrained as well. It's something that RJ Geyer for the Washington Nationals minor league team had talked about, even something as simple as comparing the difference in your trap bar deadlift with eyes open versus eyes closed, to being able to challenge your body that way, or doing a broad jump where you're, you know, jumping eyes open versus eyes closed. Is that gimmicky in your opinion? Is that valid ways to train? Like, what are some things and some tools to tweak and to help our athletes ultimately get better? That's why we're here. That's why we're talking. And anybody's listening to this, is we are trying to help train our athletes better. Are those legitimate ways, or are we just being foolish as coaches or practitioners doing that?
To be honest, I'm not a coach, so I don't coach people to perform better. I'm trying to, okay, so let's say you're coaching an athlete. Let's get them in the training room once we've got the nervous system organized on the table. Let's get them in the world that they're competing in, training in, practicing in, all these environments. And if there's certain weak points, whether it's visual or certain weak points they've got in their strengths, let's tease out some compensation patterns to do with those movements, and then watch the numbers change or watch their form change. I'm a ex elite golfer, so I've got golfers that I will have them in a practice net, running through their whole golf bag and checking that their brain and nervous system is on board with a certain swing change they're trying to make, or happy with a new set of clubs that they've bought because the weight has changed. The input to the nervous system has changed because it's a different weight, it's a different texture of grip, like there's so many different inputs. So in terms of trying to get athletes to perform better, let's get their body receiving safety on the table. Let's test them in their arena and using things like square one to tease out some perceived threats. Maybe their pelvis doesn't like going into an anterior tilt when they going in and out of a lunge or coming in and out of a squat.
Powerlift has been my choice for strength and conditioning equipment ever since I got into the field. Right now, I still have their racks, I have their barbells, I have their bumpers, specialty bars, and we have the IMTP device at Goldfinch, and it's been great for us because it's allowed us to free up the rack where we used to have to do the IMTPs. Now, we use that IMTP device, roll it around, we've created more space. You have to check them out. Doesn't matter if in your college, high school, pro, tactical, or private, they have the ability to make whatever customizations and whatever adjustments you need. I was a part of the weight room that was the 32 brand new rack facility at Iowa football. You see what they did for TCU football. Doesn't matter how big, how small, whatever your customizations are, Powerlift is number one in the exercise equipment space for a reason. Check them out in the link down below.
But a lot of the time we're looking at where the blockage is, but a lot of the time the compensation is coming from somewhere else. So it could be an old shoulder injury. It could be not getting enough information from their knee. So that's more where I come into it. I don't look at training technique and stuff like that. There's plenty of great coaches out there that are doing phenomenal work. So I don't look at that. I just want to know where the athlete's struggling and where can we draw out some cleaner responses for them where they're struggling in their weak spot. Or let's challenge what the coach is trying to get them to do to see if their body and nervous system is happy with it before we keep punishing them with reps and sets of that particular exercise.
Within that, how long will these changes last? Like you said, okay, we uncover that maybe it's a shoulder, and that's been kind of the problem. A, how long, you said it's been kind of instant to get the change to occur. My question is, how long will that last? How often do you have to keep doing it before it gets resolved? Because that might be a question that people are asking. Like, okay, well, at what point do I have to keep doing that thing and now the injury finally does get resolved? How does that work?
So if it's previous injury, we can resolve that in like an old injury if it's not. You know, we can resolve the stimulus in minutes. But in terms
what
of...
What classifies something as old? Like over a year, 6 months ago? What in your... Just, and again, just a clarifying question, not that you did anything wrong.
I mean, provided it's fully healed. Like, you can still clear up an old injury, a current injury. So let's say someone's just had a surgery, the tissue healing underneath is still going to do its thing, but the superficial scar, you can do work on that straight away and reduce their discomfort level immediately. But let's say you're talking about... increasing someone's performance and we're finding where their compensation pattern is and it is linked to an old injury, it might take, we talk in layers in terms of like an onion. We're peeling back layers. It's never like you do a squat, or it can be, but it's never like you did a squat, your brain wants more information from your neck in your cervical spine when you're performing that movement. It's never or rarely just that one correction. We might need to peel back 5 or 10 layers of compensations before your body is on board with that particular movement. So it's different from person to person, but once we've locked that in, that should stick unless they go out on, let's say, a football field and they go and injure themselves that weekend, then we might have to revisit that. But if they're not in, say, a high-impact sport or something like that, most of those things should stick unless they go and hurt themselves or have a concussion or something like that, where all of a sudden the brain's proprioceptive map has now changed and potentially become a bit blurry.
How does fascia relate, interplay with all of this?
I learned about fascia so long ago. Like, you know, I learned about fascia when I was 20 years of age as a golfer. Fascia is important, but again, from my perspective and the way I look at it, sure, it's important to train, but I mean, you're never training that just in isolation, I believe. And again, the nervous system is still the demander of where the fascia holds tension or holds us in a certain position. So to give you an example, right, I've got a client, his photo is on my Instagram page if someone wants to look at it. His rib cage was drastically flared on one side. So he's had other therapists look at him and he's like, oh, your fascia's really tight through this pec around your rib cage. You've got some blockages and some fascial restrictions in your right QL. I did nothing to that area. I didn't even touch those areas. All I did was run square one, and 10 minutes later, his rib cage was completely flat and you could go through and palpate that tissue again. The texture had completely changed. So fascia is obviously important. It's still part of the kinetic chain and how we're designed, right? But if we're just focusing on that, it's no better to do that than it is to go back and just focus on trigger points or, you know, any of these other old school techniques that I feel have been well and truly outdated or shown there's not as much impact to doing that style of treatment.
That's just incredible. Like, I can't, like, that's... That must have been what you were thinking too, though.
I was blown away by how quick it happened. I wasn't necessarily blown away by the result, but I was blown away by how quick it happened. And this client of mine was actually a manual therapy client of mine prior to me using more nervous system-based techniques on him. He'd had this issue for a long time. He could release certain tissues, do all this manual therapy work, and might give him some relief, but it didn't change the way his rib cage was sitting. and these fascial restrictions that were there. But if you think about it, how we hold our posture is largely dictated on the sensory information we're receiving from the ground up. So our brain, our posture is dictated by like 70 or 80% is based on sensory information from the ground up that we're getting.
Vitruv has been my choice for VBT for years now, not only because of the encoder and how well it works with the app, and you can film movements with the camera and get live variable feedback in real time if you so choose to on the app, but the fact of the amount of content they have been pushing out to help coaches better understand VBT. It's not only just to move the bar faster. You can be working on what's the appropriate load for high rep sets based off velocity loss. You can be looking at velocity loss threshold between sets, in between reps. VBT is not just moving the bar fast. It's moving the bar fast with heavy weights. It's not just moving lightweight fast. And Vitruv has been at the forefront educating coaches on VBT and how to do it the right way. Check them out in the link down below.
If that information is not clear, we're going to hold ourselves in weird postures and weird patterns, and we're going to hold our tension in less than ideal areas and things like that. But when we have an amazing tool to be able to go and clean this stuff up, then we need to stop chasing these symptoms and just actually clear up the image that the brain is getting from itself, if that makes sense. If your glasses are dirty, how well do you see? Not very well. What do you want to do? You want to clean them. The map of our body is no different. If I go and roll my ankle tomorrow, my brain's perception how clear the image of that ankle is has now dramatically changed, because it's an unexpected trauma. It doesn't know which movements it can safely or not safely access anymore. So then compensation is going to come through the system. But when we can clean that up, we're literally like wiping the fog off our glasses of our body map. And when we can do that, that's where we can start to see some crazy changes and long-term change. It's about making this stuff stick. We can do heaps of different neuro drills, and we can excite the nervous system and create some short-term changes, but a lot of the time, that's no better than any other corrective exercise. A lot of them don't stick. It requires ongoing inputs to keep those symptoms away, if that makes sense.
Before we dive into the posture and posturology stuff, how do, like, anybody listening that was like, oh, you know, it was fascia, like, how would they, if their question to you is like, how do you know it was fascia instead of just, you know, their muscle tissue or tendon, like, first question is how do we know, but then second question, does it really matter if we kind of apply the FRC principles of like it's all really just stuff, like, and then I guess the third question is how do you manipulate the fascia, like, because some people they've shown videos of like, oh, when you're foam rolling, you're not actually changing the length of the you're just kind of rolling over it, the mechanoreceptors aren't actually changing length.
I'm actually more on board with all that stuff. Like, I'm on board with you can never really say you're isolating a tissue. Like, there's all sorts of techniques, like you're using Graston tools or which is like metal blades to do fascial work. Cupping is, we've been told, to increase blood flow through changing and releasing fascial tension, but there's so much complexity there. There's a lot of noise there that I don't think we could ever say that. But in terms of that client,
how do you actually know? Like, how can you measure? Like, what's your pre and post measurement to say, hey, I definitively changed the length of the fascia? That's always been my hang up as like the researcher brain. Like, wait a minute, where's the pre and post test to say that there's a statistically significant change in this thing, knowing that it's fascia, when the fascia is wrapping around the muscle and the muscle also has to change length, but it's changing length because, like you said, the CEO, the nervous system, has now allowed it to get to that resting length. It's not that the muscle has changed the actual, like your gracilis or your bicep femoris or your biceps, it hasn't gotten longer. It's just now been allowed to lengthen because your nervous system isn't that overprotective parent.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's even like, I remember getting trained in like PNF stretching, right? Where you hold a stretch, then you contract and relax, make it longer.
Dasher has completely changed the game for how I'm able to time my athletes, whether I'm doing ACEL, max, velo, or curvilinear running. Had the blues, had the blacks at Goldfinch. Now that I have the silvers, this has saved me so much time in setup breakdown. If I'm going from Ankeny to Huxley, or from Ankeny to the Nevada location, or Nevada to Huxley, like wherever I got to go time athletes, it has made my ability to go from one place to another so much easier with the silvers. Strength coaches that have to go from one field to the other, or from the field to the court, this will help you save time. Now, in the spirit of saving time, you also have the ability to have an API interaction with Team Builder, so now you can see all the data on the back end. Seeing data on the back end, Dasher has a free app, a player profile app, that'll allow athletes to see their data. Over 6,000 coaches and athletes have done so. And if you want more than just the timing gates, if you check them out in the link down below, they have solutions to help you out with vertical jump, broad jump, RSI, all that. Check them out in the link down below.
I guarantee by the next morning, that quad muscle that you just PNF stretch all the day before is going to be back to the same restricted state. So what did you actually change in that moment? You gave some temporary relief, you shocked the nervous system, but you haven't actually created any long-term change. And I'm in agreement with you that I don't think we could ever isolate, or, you know, we can change tensegrity in the body in terms of where we hold tensorial balance in our in the tone of our muscles. But how can you say that's because you train the fascia only? Like, I don't understand that.
I don't either. I don't think we'll ever know. Within the world of reflexes, one thing that I wrote down there is I had these I haven't gotten them, but I had a theory, and this is the first part. I had a theory of wearing fun toes, toe socks to like drive neural input, to drive sensory input in between my toes. So that way, like if I'm wearing socks, there is some sensory input to my toes and the area around in between them. So that way, you know, feeling of that fabric just to drive, again, sensory neural feedback to my feet to help back pain, you know, posture. Is that for that theory? And again, I can't test it, but like that's just my hypothesis that anecdotally I'll feel better. I think I did. Does that hold water in your opinion?
I really respect and value the opinion of Dr. Olivia Lesler, and she talks about that our brains love and crave sensory information, and a lot of the times we starve our bodies of sensory information. We wear sunglasses when we go outside, so we're blocking the sun. Our brain can't tell what time of day it is because we're blocking it through sunglasses. We wear shoes all the time when we're outside, so our brain can't feel the texture of the ground as well. People go to the beach and wear shoes, or in Australia we call them thongs, you guys call them sandals, I think, on the beach, and the brain's going, I can see sand or I can see grass, but I can't actually sense the texture of it. Like, that's pretty, even for how advanced we are now, that's a pretty that's a pretty weird sensation for our brain to be like, I can see grass, I can see sand, but I can't actually feel it. So it makes sense why people feel better when they take their shoes off and walk on a highly textured environment. Of course they're going to probably feel better. Like, the nervous system is so excited by that.
There's a podiatrist, Dr. Emily. I had her on the show. Her episode is going to come out before yours. So give myself another note to link that episode as well. But she created fun toes with neuro, with essentially little grippers, like yoga grip on the bottom of your sock for doing yoga or Pilates, but inside the shoe to drive even more sensory input if you do have to wear shoes, just to help with people alleviating back pain and just to give that sensory input that your body craves.
Yeah. Is that the, I believe it's called Nervoso, like the inner sock? Yep. Yeah. Yep. Man, I ran in those years ago. They're incredible. They're so cool. The texture of them is really cool. You can even feel them through your socks. I think they're brilliant.
Yeah, and like that's something where I was like, okay, I was talking to my Pilates instructor about how she was proud of me that like when I was there for 50 classes and you get to get a free pair of socks. And I chose the toe socks because I was like, hey, this is my theory about why I wear my fun toes instead of just regular socks that are grippy in your class. She's like, oh, I got to connect you with this podiatrist then. I think you'll like her. So that was my anecdotal 2 cents about it. But I even felt better wearing shoes with Pilates or yoga grippy bottom sock because now my foot was tighter connected to my shoe, and it just felt, it felt like my foot was my foot again, for lack of a better term, because every time I moved it, that shoe would move too, because sometimes it can slip, it can slide, or if it's cool, air quotes, anybody that's listening, to not tie your shoes, so now your foot's flopping all over the place. Like, it all matters, right?
Yeah. Well, that was what sent me down this nervous system rabbit hole. So I got into Ironman triathlon, and I was doing ultra marathon, and when I started, my body started breaking down, and I started having issues that no one could solve, and that was what sort of pushed me down this path. It was funny, the main answer everyone had was increase the cushion height on your shoe, which just, I think Vivo Barefoot many years ago discovered that for every 4 millimeters of like foam that you put in between your toes and the ground, like the how much that dulls our sensation and how well our toes, like our flexor hallucis longus, how well that engages is, it numbs it by some staggering amount. I can't remember exactly. And it felt like every time I increased how much thickness in my sole I had, I'd feel better in the short term, and then things would actually get worse. So I was like, okay, what are we actually changing here? We shocked the body for a little while, but we're actually making the brain freak out more and more.
Yeah, it's kind of like, oh, you had a breakup with a significant other or a fight with somebody. And you're like, I'm just going to go to the bar and go drink. Like, sure, you feel better in the short term, but you didn't actually do anything to make the problem better.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, we didn't resolve anything.
No, but it made you feel better and you thought you did something, but in reality, you did actually more damage to yourself than you should have done.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know, again, with the posture stuff, how can coaches do some practical things to help their athletes or clients out with that?
Changing their posture or like improving it?
Yeah, improving their posture and just some, you know, simple everyday things that are easily accessible.
I'm a big fan of, they start that in Canada. They're called the Foot Collective. They do a lot of stuff with like being barefoot, walking on balance beams, which excites the nervous system. It's forcing you to recruit more strength and muscle fibers through your feet, which is then giving you more sensory information to the brain. And how much, let's say, let's call them dormant muscles, maybe muscles that an athlete, their nervous system struggling to access, it can actually give some temporary excitement to the nervous system and help them know what it feels like to engage those muscles again. So I'm a big fan of that kind of thing. I still like vision drills and stuff like that, but I'd rather, knowing what I know, I'd rather run it through Square One system first and clear it out. And then if vision drills are still required, let's say someone hasn't been able to track something to the right side of their face for a long time, let's clear that out first and then maybe give that corrective exercise for a couple of weeks, which will also change muscle tone, body position, what neck movements your brain will give you access back to, where you hold tension around your neck and things like that. So anything to do with the eyes, I think, is amazing. I'm still a big lover of isometrics too, like anything that forces you to hold a position for a long time is really giving really clear awareness to where your body is in space and where it's probably not sending, you know, as many signals to, if you want to use that term. So anything like that, I'm a big fan of.
How often do you need to do the, you know, vestibular drills or the convergence, divergence?
I don't think you need to do them much at all, to be honest. Once you've recalibrated that movement, because the brain's not silly, it knows how to do these movements. Once we restore it at a subconscious level, through using Square One, we've shown this many times, how many times we can get people's eyes performing a task again very quickly. After clearing it up and maybe telling them to do that particular eye exercise for a couple of weeks. I don't think they need to keep doing it.
Brandon, I appreciate you coming on. It's the end of your day there. It's awfully late. We had a time zone change. It's early in my morning, but it's late in yours. So thank you for coming on and sharing with everybody. We'll get this episode up and have – if anybody wants to reach out to you, you talked about your Instagram page with the rib flare. Where can anybody reach out to you?
Yeah, at Wired to Move on Instagram, on Facebook, and then on there, the link to my website as well here in Australia. But, Justin, thank you so much for having me on. It's been awesome. I've been really excited to chat with you. And I've listened to so many cool guests you've had on, and the content you're putting out there is really good.
Thanks so much for the kind words, man. Go get some sleep. There's no more rest of your day.
Thanks, dude. Hey, man.
Thanks for watching that video. If you enjoyed it, click right here for videos just like that, and make sure you click here to subscribe to our channel. Have a great rest of your day.